Hello, and welcome to the 112th episode of the Not Your Mama's Gamer podcast, a podcast where we talk about games and gaming from a feminist perspective. My name is Samantha Blackman, and I'm an associate professor here at Purdue University in wonderful West Lafayette, Indiana, where we talk about, write about, read about, dream about, amongst other things, video games, video games, video games. And I'm joined tonight by a couple of our usual show hosts, as well as a guest.
Special guest, yay!
Yay! And our guest tonight is Sylvia Monreal from Como Se Dice Nerd.
Yay, hey, you did it!
That sounded great! Thanks for having me.
And in addition to Sylvia, we also have Alicia Carabinas and Charlotte Hyde. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited.
Well, we're excited to have you. Anything you want to add about who you are?
Anything we should know?
I feel like I should have prepared something.
Oh no.
I feel like we're gonna dive into it as we chit chat. I guess I should say I have a dog that's very protective of me, so she might bark in the background, but that's
mine does that all the time.
Also yeah.
Sweet. We will try not to threaten you.
Yeah.
And not alarm your dog.
Appreciate it.
Here to help.
All right, then we'll jump and go say, Alicia, who are you, darling?
My name is Alicia Carabinas. I am the Dimmy boss of Not Your Mama's Gamer, the managing editor, and a PhD student at Purdue University studying rhetoric and composition. Just this week, I decided that I'm going to add to my game studies the study of sexual misconduct documentation at the university, training materials and things like that. So I'm very excited right now. I'm going to nerd out as soon as we're done recording.
Okay. And Charlotte, who are you, darling?
Well, I'm a PhD candidate at Purdue University, and I'm the resident Lego scholar. And I'm on the job market, so I will not be nerding out after this. I will be sleeping.
Or preparing job docs.
Sleeping so I can get up early to prepare the job docs.
There you go.
Well, we'll jump into the show and do our usual what you're playing, what you're reading, what you're drinking. And because my mother always taught me to have some kind of manners, we'll start with you, Sylvia. What you been playing lately?
What have I been playing? You know what? I thought I was going to have a cool answer, but I got to be honest, I'm still playing Dragon Age Inquisition. Like, I just need to accept that. I guess I finished with Trespasser, and I went back and just made a new Inquisitor, and I was like, let's start this over again. That, and then on the side, I dusted off The Sims 4, and I've been playing around there to take a break from Inquisition.
That's pretty funny, because I actually dusted off The Sims 4 last Friday as well, and I've been playing a bit of that, and I showed it to my 7-year-old for the first time.
Oh, and wow.
So she gets really excited, and she's done it since she was probably about 2 or 3. It is between the Wii and the DS, and she likes to make Miis, and she always called it making humans.
My son's really into it, too.
So when she saw The Sims, she was like, are you making humans? I'm like, you've never seen me play The Sims before? Because I used to play The Sims like crazy. It's what got my dissertation done, was rewarding myself for writing tasks with being able to play The Sims. But that was the original Sims way back in the dark ages. So, yeah, she got really excited. So I had to make her a Sim and put it in my house. But I was not allowed to make her my child. When I put her in my house, I can make her a neighbor, I can make her a roommate. Or I can make her a neighbor, a friend, or a roommate, but you could not make her a child. So apparently you can't adopt children unless they offer them to you.
Oh, man.
It was weird because I had never tried to do it before, so it was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Sylvia, I got to ask, are you a builder or a player?
I am definitely more of a player. I actually, when The Sims 4 first started out, I wasn't like feeling it because I thought The Sims 3 had much more of like a narrative role play stuff with your Sims. Mm-hmm. I did the legacy challenge in The Sims 3 where you take one family and you follow them through 10 generations, and I was just like living vicariously through them. And I'm trying to do that more with The Sims 4 now that they had a little more stuff added to it, but much more of a player, and I'm missing that in The Sims 4.
Am I the only person out there who's more of a builder?
Yes.
Yes.
I would rather have my fingernails pulled off than actually play The Sims, but I will build 16,000 houses.
Yeah, so, no, I'm. You know what, I'm so glad you said that, Sylvia, because I feel the same way about The Sims 4. The funny thing is I bought that game at launch, I played it for like 2 hours, and I turned it off, and yeah. I just turned it back on last Friday.
Yeah, I want to be open-minded about it, give it a shot. Maybe it's just like, you know, be open-minded, Sylvia, to new game experiences, but I don't know. It's not clicking yet for me.
Yep. I'm with you on that one. Yay! Somebody agrees with me. That doesn't happen very often around here. Okay, then I'll jump in and we'll go in the same order. So I've been playing in a bunch of stuff. Like I said, Sims 4. I played a little bit of. In preparation for class today, I played 12 hours. Kiva Bay's Twine game. I replayed some Depression Quest. I started playing Her Story, and I went back, oddly enough, and started playing, again, the original Animal Crossing, for the DS. What was it, Wild World? It was the first one.
Yeah.
So I played a little bit of those, and then I played some other fun stuff. We played some, Johann Sebastian Joust in class last week. Which was brutal. Kind of a blast. Brutal. It was hilarious.
It was so much fun. I wasn't there, but it's the greatest game.
So it was a lot of fun. I also, because these games launched this week, unfortunately, two of the worst games to launch in any quarter together for a person like me, Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer with those damn Amiibo cards. I cannot tell you how many trips I've made to the store to buy another pack of Amiibo cards. Because I was like, I'm going to buy one more pack because I just want to get Isabel. I'm going to keep women. I was like, I didn't get Isabel. I'm going to buy one more pack until I get Isabel. Got Isabel, and I was like, oh, I'd really like to have Digby. I'm going to buy one more pack to see if I get Digby.
You're the worst.
I am the worst. The absolute worst. So now I put myself on Amiibo card restriction. and I'm really trying not to buy Amiibo cards anywhere. That's why today when you were, Alicia, when you were like, we're going to Toys R Us, I was like, nope, can't go.
You're not allowed. That won't last long. It won't last long.
Yes, and I'm horrible because I also, and this I blame on Charlotte.
This is not my fault. This is your fault.
This is my fault. Lego Dimensions, another collectible game. So I'm
I bought more because of you.
So I go and I meet Charlotte at Toys R Us, and because they were having this sale, if you spend what was it like $35 on like little packs,
don't
you would
shop
get
with Sam.
A $10 gift certificate.
But so, then you also got one if you bought the game.
So. And you also got one if you bought the game, yes. So I ended up, you know, my original intention was just to buy the starter pack, play through it, and see if I liked it. But there mm-hmm. were all these very, very cute expansion sets, so I ended up...
It was like a whole wall of it. It was like...
And they had... Right. You know, it wasn't like... You know how you usually walk into something on launch day, a store on launch day, and there's like a smattering here and a smattering there.
No, it was like a beautiful wall of beautifulness.
And it was like stocked to the gills. And I was like, why are they doing this to me?
I think my eyes like popped out of their my face when I... rounded the corner, because I had been to two other stores before that had nothing.
Nothing.
And then I walk around the corner, and it's like, oh!
mm-hmm. Yep. So I ended up buying the starter pack, the portal levels, the Scooby-Doo pack, and...
You got Superwoman?
Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman. Yeah. The portal stuff? Yeah, I had to get the Portal stuff too because I think that's going to sell out. So.
No, I'm not even thinking about it. Y'all have fun.
Two collectible games in 1 week means that my kid's going to be eating ramen for the rest of the month.
Better not, because we have to drive to Detroit. Yay! We'll talk about that later.
All right. That's what I've been playing anyway.
Alicia? Well, Charlotte. No, might as well do Charlotte.
Right, because we just did.
Charlotte's been playing.
Lego Dimensions. I was not going to buy Lego Dimensions, which is...
I remember you saying you weren't going to buy Lego Dimensions, well, and then you got sucked into the pit of Sam.
Now, it's not even just about Sam. The problem is, I used to not really be that into Lego minifigs, and then Series 14, the Lego Monsters came out.
Yeah.
And now I want to have all of the minifigs, like all of them. And that's the problem. That's part of the problem with this game is that it has exclusive minifigs.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And so it's kind of interesting because the Lego people are just as interested in this as gamers are, except a lot of the Lego people only care about the minifigs and the builds because there's little tiny builds in these little packs. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot
That's a really interesting intersection, though.
There's a lot of anger online in the Lego world right now because the little
gamers want to play a game.
No, because the little mini builds in the packs don't come with instructions. The instructions are only in the game.
Yep.
And so if you just are buying it for the Lego, you have to go, like, hunt down the instructions at the moment. I think, theoretically, Lego will post them in a week or so, but...
Yeah, I was kind of pissed about that, too, just with the starters. Because we built all the stuff, and I was like, where are the directions for building the Batmobile?
Right,
I was like,
they're not
in the... I was like, am I missing something? And then it was just like in the directions, it was like, now turn on the game. And I was like, really? Really? So you actually had to stop gameplay long enough to build the Batmobile because that was the only place you could get the directions.
And they're doing that with the little packs too. So I got the Wizard of Oz and it comes with the Flying Monkey build.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to, I haven't built it yet because I actually haven't figured out how to find the actual instructions. I found it by accident the other day, but I wasn't in the mood, so now I've got to figure it out again. But so that's a problem. Anyway, I love the game, though.
It's very fun.
It's so addicting because you know all of these little worlds are coming because it says so on the box. Mm-hmm. But you don't know what order they're coming in. And so I keep...
But you know,
it's
that's
like addicting.
A good thing, though.
Yes, because I keep wanting to
that's
finish the level so I can get to the next one.
Apparently, we need to start a second podcast that's just Lego Dimensions.
Sorry.
Okay, this is going to be the last thing. I'm going to stop. But no, that's a good thing about this game, because with other collectible games, you can't get to certain levels unless you unlock them.
Yeah, you can
so
still
there,
do.
So there's like a whole, you can like see a whole other level or world off to the side, and they're like, you need a Skylander of the blah, blah, blah element in order to unlock this. No, with this one, you actually get to enter each world, no matter whether or not you have those minifigs from that world. You don't get to play like the narrative content, but you get to play in the world and actually do things in the world, but not that specific storyline. There's a continuation of the major storyline in that world, but you don't get to play the separate storyline.
And you wouldn't notice it. So, like, unlike Skylanders or whatever, would if you just had the game, you wouldn't notice that you were missing anything.
Nope,
so.
Not at all.
Okay, I'll stop now. It's a really fun game.
I just like how the Polygon article from a couple days ago is Lego Dimensions Guide to Spending Money.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what my article was about this week, though, right?
Yes, like, exactly. Yeah. Everybody's writing about, like...
The money.
Right. So, on that note, I played a bunch of free games or cheap games. I don't know what y'all are doing. So, most of the things that I've been playing have already been mentioned. I started replaying Her Story a little bit. I'm tracking kind of how we build game experiences. And since that one is all about building your own experience and building the narrative itself, I went back to that. I played Johann Sebastian Joust with Sam, and we didn't explain that for anybody who's never played it. Sylvia, are you familiar with this game?
I'm not, so I think the title caught my eye or ear. But yes.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about this really quickly because it's a video game with a physical element, or maybe a physical game with a video game element.
Yeah.
Everybody has to have a PlayStation Move controller. By the way, that's the other thing Sam bought this week was about 47 of those.
Yeah, those two.
Yeah, busted. And then everybody hold the controller, and your objective is to keep your controller hand still. And then there's music that plays, and when the music speeds up, you can move it more. When it slows down, you can move it less. But then you basically attack each other and try to make each other's controllers go off. So it's a horrifying game of hurting your friends.
Mm-hmm. No!
I have video from when we played this in class, and there was, like, some kung fu action happening.
That's epic.
It's really fun, but man, there's potential there for things to get out of hand. I think we need to set some ground rules next time. Also, Ashley,
yes,
if you're listening,
yes,
you cheat. You cheat. But Patrick and Tony kicking each other and fencing with their controllers was amazing. So we played that. And the only other, like, quote unquote, real game, real gamers play, that I played this week was Destiny again. I hadn't played Destiny in a while, and I had a really weird experience because Tana makes fun of me. I play with my controls inverted because I can't do anything the easy way. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, when I went back to Destiny, I don't know if I just had a headache or something, but inverted controls didn't feel right to me, and neither did regular controls. So I spent like 30 minutes just fumbling around trying to see as I was moving. It was very unnerving. I don't know what happened to my brain. But after a while, it evened out, and I could play again. But that first half an hour, I was like, is it me? Is it the game? What's going on? It was strange. Mm-hmm. I hope that doesn't mean I have some kind of brain cancer.
I would hope not.
Anyway, so that's my gaming experience in the past week or so. I didn't play any LEGO Dimensions. Not gonna.
Yeah, you will.
No, it's y'all have fun with that. Maybe an Extra Life Marathon.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, big question. Anybody been reading anything interesting and games related in the most marginal sense, tangentially even, this week?
Well, I mean, lots of stuff for your class, but outside of that, I've been reading, I mentioned this in my post this week, What Video Games Have to Teach Us About Learning and Literacy, Jim G's book.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good, interesting. Some things I wouldn't have thought of. I like the way he explains things.
Good to read the foundational stuff.
Yeah, and boy, after reading that other book, this was a nice break. I don't want to talk about that book again ever.
Well, you will have to. The book she's talking about is we read
Homo Ludens.
I'm like, what did we read? Homo Ludens in class this week.
Oh.
And some folks were kind of struggling with with definitions.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, Lord. Talk about somebody who takes 17 pages to say one sentence. My God. I mean, all the examples are necessary, but that shit is dense. Never again. Someday, later, when I drink more. But that's it. That's for me. That's what I've been reading.
Yeah, and like I said, I've just been reading stuff for class. But you know what? I've been listening to an audiobook, which is happening more and more apparently. I started listening to the copy of The Hobbit that I got on Audible, and I can't remember who the hell. It just like popped right out of my head what the narrator was, but he has this awesome voice, and you know, of course, a British accent. And it's really kind of soothing to hear him read. But then he's got this kind of rich, he's got this rich baritone voice. So even when there's like the sections in the book where like the dwarves break into song, he actually starts to sing, and he sounds awesome. So I've been listening to it at night with P. And his voice is so soothing between that and the dwarves' songs, it, like, knocks her right out every night.
Aww.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm like, we could just listen to the dwarves' song section every night and go right to sleep. Hmm. Anybody else reading anything interesting?
So it has to be related to games?
Nah.
No.
What are you reading?
The Hobbit's not. I just threw that out there.
Oh, fair enough. I didn't catch that. I'm so embarrassed, but I just read Dragon Age: The Masked Empire in like 2 days. Like, just because I'm trying to not play Inquisition anymore, so this is like kind of easing me back to the real world, like off of Dragon Age. So that's, for those of you who haven't heard of it before, it's just like a novelization of stuff that happens pre-game, explaining the Empress Selene and her drama. That is just like one mission in the game, and they put 400 pages of backstory conveniently located for all of us who are just sucked into this Dragon Age land.
Nice.
So the big question is it any good?
Yeah, you know, I was pleasantly surprised because my expectations for novelizations and like tie-ins like that was pretty low. So I was coming in with thinking it'd be like a guilty pleasure end of summer read. But it was pretty entertaining. I liked that they wrote it as a good enough story on its own, even though it's definitely just backstory for a side mission, like one mission you do in the game. So it was entertaining. I don't think you could just pick it up and read it if you've never played Dragon Age before, but it was definitely worthwhile, and I'd recommend it. And I got it from the library, so it was free. So it was totally worth it.
Yeah, no, that's great. What was I going to say? Oh, speaking of books and libraries and video games, I've been volunteering at the library at Peace School one morning, theoretically, yeah, but I end up staying there all day, a week. One of the projects that I've been working on, I finally had an opportunity to build because I had like painted all the stuff and put everything together at home, and I took it all in and put it together this week. Is I made a display of If You Like, You Might Like, video game book connections. I said I was going to do like three games at a time. So if you like these games, you might like these books, and then pull elements from the games, and put books like either fiction, both fiction and nonfiction, about that would be in those veins underneath like the signs. And I set up a display. It's really cute.
Because
I painted like a fake TV screen, and then there's a keyboard, and then there's like an old broken 360 that I had in the lab, and it's set up on a little table with a chair like you were actually gaming. So it was pretty cute. It was pretty fun. I was very proud of myself for doing that.
Yeah, I love that. I wish my bookstore had that. I would be all over it.
So
all Minecraft.
Yeah, well, you know, the actual Minecraft books in the library go out so quickly, and then everybody's like, do any Minecraft books? So I was like, well, they're really interested in books, you know, dealing with, like, games and the games worlds, so if we can show them something else, maybe they'll get interested in that, too. And it was funny because the staff person who also volunteers in the library stopped me when we were leaving today.
Yeah.
Like, it's gorgeous, and the kids love it. She was like, my son came in, and he was like, come see this. And she was like, I'll be there in a minute. He was like, no, you have to see this right now.
That's so cute. I love that.
So, I guess they like it so far. We'll see. All right. See, that was books. That was barely quickly. Here's the fun part. What you drinking? Hey. Sylvia, what you drinking?
I'm drinking a Trader Joe's ginger beer. Really living it up over here.
Well, the Trader Joe's ginger. I've never had their ginger beer. Is it any good?
I mean, it is what it is. I would think I would have been fine with it, but one of my college friends once took me to, what's that place in Virginia where they pretend that they're still in colonial times?
Williamsburg?
That's the one. She gave me ginger beer there, and that was just like off the charts amazing. So if I hadn't had that ginger beer experience, this would be good. But because I have, it's forever like paled the rest for me.
Aww.
Oh, that's sad. Alicia, what you drinking tonight, darling?
I'm drinking a Coney Island hard root beer, which I will say is better than the Not Your Father's Root Beer to me.
Ah, interesting. I like them both.
See, I'm interested to try the Coney Island because I'm not the huge fan of Not Your Father's.
Hmm. Not I as like huge it. As I don't know why I like it. I do.
I can only drink one though, because it's very rich. So
it's very sweet, and it's also it's got that combination of heavy spice and the dark ale, and those two together is just kind of like punch you in the head.
So I'm Terry and I, my husband, are big fans of complex root beers. It makes it sound like the biggest geeks. You know, where you can really taste all the different spices and stuff. So I appreciate that a lot in that. But I think that there are some elements in that that are a little bit too strong.
I think it's the bitterness of the dark ale that is what just kind of sets it off balance. Because I like a good root beer too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's the bitterness of the dark ale that sets it off balance.
Yeah, the Coney Island is smoother to me. It blends better.
Yeah.
Somebody on my Facebook page said that you should put two shots of Bailey's with it, and I was like, that sounds interesting.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I'll try anything. It sweeter. That would be horrible.
Well, I mean, as opposed to my wanting to put vanilla ice cream in it, I mean.
I hear a lot of people are doing that, though, making root beer floats.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't see how that's sweeter than that.
Mm-mm.
I mean, maybe I'll do both, and we'll see. It'll be an experiment.
Taste there test. There you go. Yeah. By the way, I have a whole bunch of random shandies for you, Charlotte.
Yes, yes. That's what I do. I know people hate my beer, so I tell them it's awesome, so they'll buy it for me.
And then you get free beer.
So right. I'm drinking a Harvest Patch shandy right now. It's good.
Y'all bitches in your pumpkin shit.
Yeah, me. I don't drink pumpkin. So, and then I guess it's on me. I am drinking a cider. For some reason, you guys got me, like, hooked on cider.
Which one? Is it the Strongbow?
It is a Strongbow.
Those are really good.
I like the Strongbows, and I've been drinking a lot of different ones.
Mm-hmm.
Like the berry one, I really like.
Oh, man, y'all start putting berry and shit. It always tastes artificial to me. I don't know how you can drink it.
No, the Strongbow berry is actually pretty good, at least in my opinion. And then the honey one, which is super sweet, is really dangerous because especially if you're like thirsty. I drank a lot of those when it was hot, and I was just like.
The Strongbow used to not be so widely available, and when it started being available in bottles around here, they're selling a lot more of it, and it's cheaper too, which is dangerous all around.
Yeah. But tonight I'm drinking, and so I went out and bought more of this, and I blame Ashley, was the Gold Apple, which is not as sweet as the honey. So it's kind of like it's not like a sour apple, but it's somewhere between a golden delicious. Yeah, that's what it is. It's kind of the sweetness of a golden delicious apple. Right? So, yeah. That's what I'm drinking. And since I have a dissertation defense tomorrow, I'm only drinking one.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then let's get to Sylvia.
Yeah.
What's up?
Hey.
Hey.
She's like, what's up?
What's up? Y'all been talking about Legos and beer.
I know everything.
I've learned a lot, I've got to say. This has been very interesting for me.
Well, we'll jump in, and we have some questions that we wanted to throw at you and see where you are with answers.
Sounds good.
Our first question is kind of is not a gatekeeping question, but a question we just have. When did you start gaming?
Since ever. I can't. I've been on a couple podcasts now, and they always ask this question. I always feel so boring, be like, forever, since as long as I can remember. But
yeah, that's a great answer, though.
Yeah, yeah. There's this. I just have these memories of like this really old, giant desktop computer with like the floppy disk games. We only had like two floppy disks that we could use, and there was such a process to use them. They just have always been around. I realized that when I would go visit my family, that's when games really were front and central. All of my theos, my uncles would be playing dominoes in one room, and all the cousins would be gathered around whatever console one of us had at the time, like the Sega or the Super, all the way up to the PlayStation. And even now, that's what we do when we get together as a family. It's just, all right, y'all play your silly old games, and then all the kids will be over here playing whatever hip new game is out.
I like that, though. Can I be adopted?
If you'd like, you could. There's so many of us that you could probably sneak right in.
Nobody would notice.
Yeah. Like, okay. Out. Loser gives up controller. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
But that's cool. Is that, you know, because to have that kind of experience, right? Because I mean, Alicia and I have kids, and our kids are going to have that same experience because, you know, they've been playing games. At least my little one like started gaming all by herself when she was like 15, 16 months old.
Yeah.
You know, she just, I walked away from my DS one day when I was playing Scribblenauts, and she picked it up, and I came back, and I have a picture because I stopped and took a picture of it because it was the cutest fucking thing I'd ever seen. So she's leaning, she's got the DS on the side of the couch, and she's holding the stylus in her little hand, and she's like, she's just like leading Maxwell around the screen. And I'm like, a gamer is born. Yeah, I mean, so I think it's really great to have like generations of folks that can like not remember not gaming. I'm old.
Yeah.
I'm really old. So yeah. I was like 7 when I started gaming, but I started with like the very first handheld games, like the handheld ColecoVision games. That tells you how old I was, because they came out when I was 7. So it was just like little blips across the screen, and you could play football, and you could play basketball, and you could play hockey, right? So all those, because you know I'm from Michigan, so everybody, no matter, you know, no matter what race you were into hockey, damn it. so you know we had those too, right? So, and yeah, I was 7 and I'm old. Yeah.
I think it's so cool that there's so many more games that you could share with people now. Like, that's one thing when I was thinking back, like sharing with my cousins, we were all playing like single player games and we made them group experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so cool now that my niece, I have a 2-year-old niece, I can't wait for my sister to let her look at screens long enough for us to play video games, because it'll be so easy to involve her and like have it be an experience as opposed to like, oh, you get to watch me and tell me what buttons to push. Mm-hmm. You can actually like enjoy it together.
Yeah, I have a 2-year-old you know, she's not as naturally interested, I think, as my son was when he was her age. That's just because she's really independent. But whenever she really likes, though, to play with games on her phone, she likes to sit in our lap and mess with the phone. And that's just really fun to kind of sit with her and, you know, do it together in a place where, like you're saying, you can both participate in some way.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool. And she can manipulate that because she can use her fingers.
Yeah, and your niece, don't let the screen time limits stop you, because we have some pretty severe screen time limits in my house. Like I always tell people, my daughter played Ni No Kuni beginning to end 120 hours, 1 hour at a time.
Yeah.
It took forever.
Yeah.
But that's one of her, you know, her biggest game experiences in her head. That, you know, she'll still go back, because she was like 4, and she's 7 now, and she'll still go back from time to time and ask to play it again, or watch, like, Stampy Cat Let's Plays, just because she loved that story so much. So, yeah, that's all. It's always cool. Don't let screen time limits scare you. They can get immersed pretty easily.
If I lived in the same state as my niece, that screen limit would be much more flexible, but because she's got a couple states between us, it's very easy for my sister to keep her rules the way she wants them. Well, that's cool. That's cool.
Good times.
Oh yeah.
Well, I bet we can guess one of your favorite games.
Sure, go for it.
Probably Dragon Age.
Oh yeah. What gave it away?
I don't know. Reading adaptations. But, you know, now that we know a little bit about your history, what are you into?
Sorry, I missed the last part of that question.
What are you into? What are your favorites?
Oh, my favorites. Oh, my gosh. There's
all
so many.
All-time favorites.
I always have to say Ocarina of Time is probably one of the top ones, because...
Oh, don't say that. Sam's going to yell at me.
Don't speak to her. She hates Ocarina of Time. And no, I'm replaying it right now, and she hates it. Because she's a heathen.
I don't hate it.
She hates everything.
I do. I'm a hater. I'm the resident.
I mean, all opinions are valid, but I think you might be wrong about this.
I really like the way you phrased that. I still feel respected.
I appreciate it. And that there's also this great deal of nostalgia, because that was, like, the first game that I remember playing, like, on my console without it being, like, a hand-me-down or something that I could play at someone else's house. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, like, the world unfolding, and I was, like, kind of young, so it was very good with, like, my development. I'm like, oh, I could do anything if I just try hard enough, like, that kind of feeling. And the little cherry on top was going to visit my aforementioned cousins and beating the game for them, because they couldn't figure out how to beat the game. I was like, I got it. I know what to do.
I got you back. We're all right.
Yeah. So it was very... That was, like, my heroic video game memory. So that has a special place in my heart. But I guess I could see why people might not like it. Maybe.
I can't. I cannot. I think that there's something wrong with her.
That's fine.
I know. I still love you.
Other favorite games. I think along those same lines, I have a special place in my heart for just the Pokemon games in general. Grew up with them. I remember begging my mom for, like, Pokemon Red. I was like, we could go to a pawn shop. I'm sure they have them somewhere for really cheap. Trying to be really frugal about it. And then now it's just amazing to still be able to play this game that I played when I was so young. So now I keep going back to the games, even though they're kind of getting monotonous and, like, kind of getting a little boring, but it's like visiting an old friend at this point. And I'm trying to think if there's any other newer games that are, like, my favorite. Oh, The Sims. Yeah, definitely The Sims. I remember playing the original Sims. I skipped Sims 2. I don't remember why. I think I wasn't into computer games as much at that point. But The Sims 3 was what got me through my second year of AmeriCorps. Like, I could not have functioned without having that space to work through.
No, I was expecting her to say something. I remember the original Sims. I was like 5, just to make me feel really old.
No. I don't know. I don't remember how old I was, but I definitely remember seeing it and being old enough to, like, actually get what was going on. So it wasn't that long ago.
I played The Sims 2 the most, and because I'm a builder, not a player, I think I filled up my entire hard drive with downloads and extras and furniture and just stuff. I had a problem.
Well, that first time, you know, when The Sims first came out, and it was like, you can download other people's houses and skins and design stuff. It was like, this is like the best thing ever. So you kind of got, I did anyway, kind of obsessed with it. But I didn't play it just for that, but I would bring those elements in to, you know, kind of a narrative. And then I would do other kind of weird, mean stuff, like I would, you know, go and find a house that I really like and get romantically hooked up with the person who lived in the house and then, like, kill them off so that I could have their house. You know, kind of the in-game houses. Yeah. I know, I'm horrible. The funny thing is that I was, like I said, I'm playing again, and I was going through and I was looking at some of the kind of pre-existing houses, and I was like, ooh, that house looks good. I could get that one. And I was like, oh, that's really kind of demented. I probably shouldn't do that. Because that says something horrible about me, I'm sure.
No, everything is A-okay in The Sims, except for, like, really odd things. I think now that I'm getting older, the constraints that are there with The Sims are starting to bug me more, like how you can't have, like, the long hairstyles for the male characters, and they just have, like, the same 6 hairstyles where they're all super lame. I'm like, this poor man, he wants to look better than what you're giving him to work with. So I like that you could do a lot with The Sims, but now that I'm getting older, I'm like, okay, but how come you haven't fixed this yet? And, like, given me this option to do everything I want to do with The Sims.
Yeah. At this point, you know, come on, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
It does seem like certain elements of The Sims have gone backwards, especially in between 3 and 4. And it's kind of disheartening. Yeah. I really love The Sims.
And I know they could do better. You know, I they could do better.
Right. We want you to be better. We want you to be better. That's all. All right, so here's a question to kind of jump into, I guess, the meat of the conversation.
Sure.
So I know for me, it's like I've always, like I said, I played games for 40 years now. Because I'm really old. Well, 39. I'm not claiming that 40 yet until next year. I've been playing games for 39 years now. But it wasn't until probably 15, 16 years ago that I really started to pay like close attention to race in a critical way in games. And it was because I had given my nephews, and I forgot that I had that we had gifted it to them, a Dreamcast for Christmas. There were four of them, so we were like, here's one present. Don't ask us for anything else. I was going through some of the games, because I had bought them the same games that I had bought for myself, and I was playing some of them, and I was looking, and I was like, this shit's horrible. What did I just give them? because they were games that I wouldn't normally buy. And so it was like the initial kind of Dreamcast boxing game that came out, and the African American characters in that game were so horrible that they were such stereotypes, you know, between their kind of narrative stance and their very movements around the ring, and I felt horrible, and that was kind of that turning moment for me. What made you start thinking about race critically in games?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's actually much easier for me to like figure out than games, because I'm, what, like 27? I've been playing games like 24 years. Like, I can't remember a time when I wasn't playing and interested in video games, but I think the thing that started to click was, so after I graduated, I did AmeriCorps, and it was in a K-8 school in Newark, New Jersey, and it was all about, like, everything, crash course, education, social justice, the iniquities in our education system. Like, I was in it for 2 years, so that really put all that front and center, and I would go to games to try to escape from the stress and, like, just everything. And that's when I started to click these two together, where I was like, oh my gosh, video games, too, are just another, like, extension of everything I'm learning and seeing and about our culture and the images that are propagated in it. So I think I've always been involved in games, and I definitely have always had this interest in just understanding how the world works. And it wasn't until that moment when I was old enough to like put the two together and be like, oh my gosh, even the video games are perpetuating all these things. I think the thing that really pushed me over the edge to try to like not just see it, but to understand it, maybe push back on it, was my job after AmeriCorps was much more involved in a Latino identity and like what can we do to get Latino undergraduates to enter education with that ownership of we will be Latino teachers, and that's what this means in this world. And then I started to see like how we were, or specifically were not, featured in video games. Like this huge aspect of media just like made us invisible. So I'm trying to tell these kids like we need to be the people we want to see, and like we need to be role models. And then I would go to video games and I'm like, but you're not going to see us here. Like, I know this is like a huge multi-million dollar industry that we all are probably familiar with in one way or the other, but they're not there yet. They're not so nuanced in their racial conversation to make it black and white, but to like move past that, like the real complexities. That's a lot. I could explain a little bit more of any of that if I need to, but that was only like 2-3 years ago when I started to really put all the pieces together and then start to move past it to really understand and explore and see what I could do about it.
Yeah, it's odd because when it hits, it's kind of like a gut punch, right?
Yeah. Like, wait a minute.
Right.
Wait a minute.
Absolutely. Okay, well, that kind of is a good way of leading into our next question.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to, did I write that question?
actually, I think maybe based on what she was just saying, if we could switch up the order a little bit.
You think?
I think so.
Okay. I see which one. Pop it.
Yeah, I kind of want to move down to the last questions and leave that one for the end.
Sure.
Because of what you were just saying, besides just rote invisibility,
mm-hmm.
What do you think are the biggest obstacles faced right now by all kinds of marginalized players in gaming? Because, I mean, there's just basic invisibility, but that's like such a horrible problem to deal with. There's not even any place to start other than by saying, stop it, right? Yeah. But there's so much more than that. So I was just curious about your perspective, kind of expanding on what you were just saying.
Yeah. I think, so not to get stuck on this idea of invisibility, but I think maybe a different take on it, it's not just that we don't see ourselves, but it kind of is coming from this place where, at least my experience with Latino identity specifically, we're never told our own stories, even just in the context of where we grew up in the U.S. So I grew mm-hmm. up in Arizona, the Southwest. I didn't hear about, I'm going to butcher the name because I'm in public with people, but I think it's, there's a Spanish conquistador who explored from Florida through Mexico, and his account were in like the 1500s. I did not hear about any of that, not about the native peoples who settled the land, not about Spain owning the land, not about Mexico owning the land. My American history started with the Mayflower, just with everyone else, and then we worked from there. So we're not even told our own stories to feed into our collective imagination to when we get to these points where we're making fictional stories influenced by all the things we know about. Like, the invisibility starts so far back. So I think that's something, but more true to your question of like moving past invisibility, I think just the burden of having to, when I'm with my family, being Latina is a source of strength and happiness, and it's so true. Like, it's even though I don't speak Spanish, I'm super pale, I'm like super assimilated, the fact of me being Latina is never questioned, and it's always just like a given and a positive. And then to go into this outside world, it suddenly becomes a burden. Like, oh, I have to explain who I am. I have to explain why it's okay that I get to call myself Latina. But, you know, it's not everyone's called Latina. Let me educate you about all this. It's such a burden. And games are supposed to be fun. So for my hobby to also have that burden is such a downer sometimes. So that's like an additional challenge that mm-hmm. I could definitely see why people it's one of the challenges I see now when I'm trying to find content to feature on my Como Se Dice Nerd account. Not everyone that I might identify as Latino nerds wants to be called Latino, wants to be called a Latino nerd. Sometimes they're just trying to live life. They don't need to be pulled into this right now. So that's a few different challenges there. It's hard to like always be explaining yourself. It's hard to always be carrying this baggage around when you're just trying to relax. It's hard to find other people who are willing to take on this extra challenge with you. Yeah. Yeah, so it's all of those things wrapped up together in this nice little world.
Yeah, I'm like so with you on there because, like I always say, it's like for me, what I do is not an option;
mm-hmm.
it's what I have to do. Yeah. Right? It's what my brain, my body, my being tells me I have to. But that's not the same for everyone, and some people don't, like you say, want to, I don't want to say don't want to acknowledge it, but they don't want to focus on it.
Yeah.
Right? They want to try to specifically not focus on it.
Yeah.
And you have to respect people's choices in that case.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, and there's so much in that. Like, there's, I think about my mom. So she was born and raised in El Salvador in a really bad time to be born and raised in El Salvador. So I don't necessarily need to be bringing her into my burden as an American-born Latino. Like, hey, Mom, I know you've got some identity questions and, like, your own country's history. But also on top of that, let's talk about America's problems. So there's, like, I don't want to add to other people's burdens just because we might all fall under the umbrella of Latino, whatever that means. And then there's also in this specific hobby, like, if you're going to be an activist, like, really, is video games where you want to be spending your energy? Like, sometimes that comes up a little bit when I think about my old work, which was very much about getting Latinos to finish college, getting them to take on leadership positions in education. Like, that is very powerful, and that could get people through a lot of bad days. And then to go to, like, video games, you know what? I can understand why some people might not want to take on that burden for this hobby that, even though it's a big part of my life, some people just think of as, like, oh, the little phone games that they play while they're waiting in line. Like, some people aren't really going to take that on as their challenge.
Well, and there's also, I think, because I've experienced this too, just even as a white woman, this pressure by other people to be like, well, why do you always have to bring up these issues? Why can't you just be a gamer? Why can't you just be a person? Like, you know, you can just stop being all your other identities and just be a person. So I feel like a lot of those people that you mentioned maybe don't want to get pulled in are living with that kind of pressure all the time. And people are like, why do you always have to make it about race?
Yeah.
You know, like, heaven forbid people get recognized for who they are and represented. And Nolan doesn't voice every character in video games ever.
And I think I'm more and more aware of that dissonance of, like, for a lot of us, this particular part of our identity is a source of pride. So for it to be put into a place where it's something that's ignored or neglected or something painted negatively, like, why would you want to do that? Like, why would you want to go from this place where this is a great part to, like, go to people who don't even like it? So I could see a lot of things are going wrong today, y'all.
Well, let's all try a little bit harder to try to fix it. No pressure, though. No pressure. That was a downer.
And I blame you.
Yeah, but it's all my fault.
Really.
Make it better, Sam.
Bring in the party.
Well, I think that probably the next question is, you know, so you're doing something interesting, right? Is you're doing the Hispanic Heritage Game Month Game Jam.
Yeah.
What is this thing? And where'd it come from?
So I'm going to get meta. I love that in the past couple of interviews I've done, that's the progression of the conversation. Like, let's talk about the problem. Everyone gets real defeated by the problem, but now we have the Hispanic Heritage Month Game Jam to talk about to lift us up, and that's really kind of the spirit of what was behind that. Like, there's so much out there about what's frustrating and what's not working, but I know there's so much out there that's great, and people just are creating, especially now when there's so many resources available. You can actually go to school for video game design. We have resources like your website where people can take in this content and learn and not have it be a burden. Okay, let's do more of that. So I started the Como Se Dice Nerd account to shed some light on people who are just creating, who are putting things out there so that we wouldn't have to always start the conversation proving that we exist. We could just go to the next level. Okay, we exist. We're working. Let's celebrate ourselves. Let's support each other. Let's put ourselves out there a little bit. And I think the next level is something like the Hispanic Heritage Month Game Jam. Should I take a little bit to talk about Hispanic Heritage Month for a little bit? Do y'all know?
Sure. No, tell us more.
Sure. So it started a while ago. It was originally a week. Mm-hmm. Like, we have so many weeks, National So-and-Such Week. There's, like, Black History Month. There's Women's History Month.
Which also started out as a week.
Yeah. They usually start out as, like, a day and a week. And then you try really hard to get a whole month. And this one starts on September 15th, and it goes through October 15th. And it starts in the middle like that because it actually gets to encompass a lot of Latin American Independence Days. They usually start on the September 15th. There's a few more later on. It also has the added benefit of having Columbus Day right there in there. So that's like a fun little gem of history. Yeah. We could have a whole other podcast about that. But the moral of the story is, it's like everything else. It's meant to accumulate resources and attention to this particular area of culture. And when I was a kid growing up, it was very tokenizing. It was very infantilizing, like Taco Tuesdays, let's like draw pictures of sombreros, and I did not like it. But now that I'm getting older, I really appreciate having a forum where there's so much media attention, there's so many political resources or advocacy resources like geared up for this month, that this year I just thought, what would happen if we took some of that attention and spotlighted this good stuff that's happening in games, hence the Hispanic Heritage Month Game Jam, which was just me putting it together on an itch.io and hoping people show up and do something with it. But yeah, that was kind of the spirit behind putting that together.
So how's it going so far? Because we're about halfway through now.
Yeah, we're about halfway through. So I think for it just being me trying something out, I think it's going great because people actually like responded. No one said no. It didn't just like die out with a whimper. So that was my standard. I think it's going great by that standard. But we've had some interesting responses. We had people who volunteered to translate the actual webpage, so that would be in English and in Spanish, which I really appreciate. Translating can be a profession, so for them to donate their time like that, I'm super grateful. Mm-hmm. We have people using the hashtag to feature Latin American game studios, just a quick tweet every day, like, oh, the so-and-such studio in Peru or in Chile or Argentina, they have this game, which I really like. And a few tweets here and there, I haven't seen any games submitted yet, but a couple of murmurings of people who, you know, that wonderful sentence, like, I never thought about making a game before, but maybe I'll make one for this game jam, which just...
That's so great.
I don't, even if they don't actually do it, although I hope they do, because you can, and it will be awesome, that was beautiful, because, like, sometimes that's all it takes. It's just, here's a space that says you can do it, to do it. You know, so if that happens for one person, okay, great. That's a good place to start.
Great. Yes. Charlotte, what about your question, darling?
Well, I was reading your About page, and you were saying that you went running to your computer to looking up the Latinx nerds, so I was wanting to talk about what those, or what that means.
The actual phrase, Latinx. Yeah. Yeah. So,
well, Latinx nerds, yeah.
So to get real deep in the woods, most of the time we talk about people who are from Latin American countries or descended from people from Latin American countries, recently you would call them Latino. And we could get into why that's a recent thing. And actually kind of starting to get outdated. It's both recent and outdated, depending on who you ask. So there wasn't really a word, at least on the census level, to describe all these people. And that came up around the 80s, and that was Hispanic. A lot of people are rejecting that term because it directly relates to speaking Spanish or Spain, and a lot of other people kind of embrace the term Latino, but that has the masculine O at the end, or in my case, I would say Latina. Not everyone really feels comfortable identifying as Latino with the masculine or Latina with the feminine. There's also that weird grammar thing of, like, if one guy's in a group of girls, the masculine gets used, so right. Latinx eliminates all those gender things. You could also use Latino with the at sign, and I've heard that read Latinoa, like quinoa, but I don't think I don't think people actually say it out loud that much because it's weird, but that's what I use on Twitter, and that is, again, just to like remove the gender element from it, but then that idea of Latino X or Latinoa nerds is just, you can be Latino, you could be a nerd, but then to take both those identities and put them forward definitely takes a certain step that you, like, that's kind of a responsibility you're taking. So that's why I wanted to put that out there. We're not just celebrating this part of identity, not just this part of identity, but the fact that we believe they go hand in hand, and we're going to stand up in this culture that doesn't necessarily value either one of them, certainly not together, and say, actually, they do go together. And I love that they can go together. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yes, and then some, actually.
Cool.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had sort of thought it had something to do with the gender by your About page, but until you mentioned it, I had forgotten the strong masculine.
Yeah. And then just as
in that language.
Just as a side note, because they said that it's kind of outdated, even Latino or all the variants of it kind of relates to like the colonizer, like, so the idea mm-hmm. that your identity is directly tied to the people who colonized you doesn't really sit well. And it's actually not applicable to a lot of people. So it's both a recent term and outdated. And that's one of the struggles of trying to celebrate that is someone that I might call Latino would actually find that term offensive or just completely inaccurate. So I really need people to like opt in to be celebrated by this website, because I definitely don't want to like, again, make it a burden when it's supposed to be something fun and celebratory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so much to consider.
Yeah. I know. But that's the nice thing about things like the game jam. Like, at the end of the day, like, if we just make a space where we say, like, we're coming from a place of celebrating each other, being positive with each other, and learning from each other, that's like half the battle right there, because that's hard enough to find a place where you can ask these questions or talk about these things without it being like, why do you got to make it about race right now, Sylvia? Why do we got to talk about what a census term means and why that might be sad for people? Like, let's get over that and just like move past it.
Well, we want to know that stuff. But yeah, I also want to know, like, about a little bit more just about, I guess I could ask it this way. What's the most interesting thing for you that's come out of the experience of the game jam so far? Not necessarily products, but, like, people who've contacted you or some kind of response to it. So let's take this back to the positive place. Like,
yeah,
we're changing the world.
Yeah. I think just the fact that no one said that it was dumb, you know? Like, so it's hard to just put things out there in the internet sometimes, and you never know how it's going to land. Yeah, right? Like, did you know sometimes people can be mean on the internet? But there's also that awfulness of people not wanting it. Like, there was a very real chance that I could have been the only one who thought it was even worth tweeting about. Like, there's a ton of tweets I give out every day that literally no one else cares about, and that's fine. But this was something that I thought was really cool. So I think the most interesting thing was how people responded to it and retweeted it. And, like, even if they don't end up participating, the fact that it had some kind of traction, that I get to go on awesome podcasts like this just to talk about it, like, that is so heartwarming, because it was a very real possibility that people were like, okay, on to the next thing, you know, or like moving on. This actually isn't a need. This actually isn't something that we want, but people have been really open to it, and I'm super appreciative of that, and that's probably the most impressive thing for me right now. In a couple weeks, I hope to say that the most impressive thing will be that people actually submitted games, but we're not quite there yet.
Well, I'm really excited to see what comes out of it. Keep us in your loop.
Yeah, of course.
You know.
I mean, if y'all have some free time, you don't have to identify as Latino to celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month, so just saying. If y'all got some students that need something to do with their free time after all the homework assignments.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Like,
we're all internally giggling.
About ample free time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing. I'm like, oh, even if people like it, will they have time? But we'll see. We'll see.
And, you know, and then the thing is that if you do it this year and you do it again next year, people will be expecting it.
Yeah.
As it comes up, and they'll be planning for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my hope, that it could be a yearly thing, that just like how Hispanic Heritage Month is happening all the time, like, why can't we use that to, like, celebrate in the way we want to celebrate our heritage? Mm-hmm. And that could be with games or other art forms or whatever else the kids are up to these days. I don't know. The Snapchat story or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, right? As someone who's been, you know, doing, what, Now Your Mama's Gamer now for almost 5 years, it'll be 5 years in January.
Nice.
Even if it doesn't work out the way that you want it to this year, don't get discouraged, right? I mean, you just got to give it time to kind of build up momentum more than anything else, because it's an awesome and worthwhile project.
Such a great idea.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely. Because that's why I was like, yeah, you need to come talk to us, because... Let more people know about it.
Yeah, that's something I'm really, I recognize how fortunate I am to, like, after my whole, like, the scales falling from my eyes and realizing, like, oh, video games are also perpetuating stereotypes. Mm-hmm. At least I wasn't on my own when I had that realization. Like, there were resources that I could turn to. I know part of the reason why I wanted to make the At Almost a Decent Nerd account was after seeing the success of the Black Girl Nerds account. Like, not only is that a great Twitter account, but there's a whole community built up around there. And, yeah, it's just, like, such a great proof point. Like, there are so many things wrong with the quote-unquote gamer culture, but it doesn't have to be that way. And there's, like, evidence of that now. So. Yeah.
That's great. More visibility, more people out there. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I've got one kind of wrap-up question that I always ask folks. And that is, just in case we missed anything, because we talk a lot.
Mm-hmm. You may have noticed.
Is there anything that you want to tell us about that we might not have asked you tonight?
Actually, I kind of, could I ask a question instead of tell y'all about
something? Sure.
Yeah. So I would love, just because I rarely get to just sit around and talk with games with people who take games so seriously, like, I would love to hear what y'all's perspective is on Latino identity in games. If you have, like, a quick 60-second, it could just be like, you know, I never thought about it before, but I'm just sort of curious. I can only get to so many games a year, with being frugal and not having time. I would just love to hear other people's perspectives. Like, have you played a game with Latino characters or a game set in a Latin American country? Or,
well, I mean, Grim Fandango, but that aside.
Yeah.
Have you ever played Grim Fandango? And I asked this for a specific reason. Have you ever played Grim Fandango?
I have not.
It's an old LucasArts point-and-click adventure game that is...
I know it has, like, Mexican Day of the Dead's imagery. Yes.
Yeah. And you know what? It was, especially for its time, has a strong narrative, fairly accurate culturally, and it was one of the I don't want to say least offensive, because it's a really good game.
Yeah.
So I don't want it to, and to say least offensive kind of implies that it is offensive, and it has its shortcomings, yes. I mean, especially considering the time, this was almost 15 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was a huge point-and-click adventure game fan, and it's still one of my favorite... still one of my favorite games. So like I said, simply because it was fairly accurate culturally, and it didn't have a lot of the stereotypes and negative connotations built in.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's always been a fun game to me. I'll kind of answer that question, because since I'm already talking, and then I'll pass off so I don't talk too long. I pay attention, but that's probably because, you know, my PhD is in minority rhetorics, so it's kind of what I study.
Yeah.
So I pay closer attention to those things, and, you know, when I find a pretty good game, I'm really excited, but then most of the games that you play that are your AAA titles, you get racism that is embedded so deeply in the game that it's not just in the narrative or the characterization, but, I mean, insane shit.
Yeah.
Like, when you pull off a combo, right, the screen flashes, you hear mariachi music, and it says spicy burrito move, and you're like, really? What the fuck is that? That was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's those kinds of things that make me want to strangle someone.
Yeah.
But when you can give me a game where the cultural identity is a part of the narrative in such a way that it's like, oh, here's a person in this story who's doing these things, and they are also, rather than here's another Mexican entering who's sneaking across the border to do this cartel business, and they're going to kill a bunch of people, right?
Yeah.
It's like, somebody's got to be tired of that somewhere by now.
Yeah. Right? We think, and yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of where I am. And mm-hmm. and I'm old and easy to offend, apparently.
I'm not as old as you, but I'm equally offended by things. I want people to stop reusing the same narratives, even outside of anything else. Given the luxury to divorce myself of any kind of racial, cultural, gender, intersectional narratives at all, mm-hmm. as somebody interested in writing and characterization, can we, by God, stop rehashing the same stuff? There's so many settings and stories and ideas that are just never explored, and it gets old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to learn and experience cool things and see different stuff when I'm playing. Show me that. Where is it? It's not there.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same stuff over and over. I'm just tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, not to be fatalistic.
I mean, not to be fatalistic.
Yeah.
But, no, I'm kidding. No, there's no way. I mean, I think that in many ways, especially with a lot of independent games, not only Latino representation and Latino representation is improving, but also representation of minorities in general is improving. But, you know, the sad part is it is in these independent games, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even the games that are coming from independent sub-studios within larger companies, right? It is that, oh, well, you can have, you know, $100,000 to do this over here, but we're not going to make it a AAA title, right?
Yeah.
And it's just that, but like I said, it gives me some hope that somewhere that, you know, people will see how successful a lot of these smaller independent titles are. And perhaps they will influence AAA titles in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, though, that there's so many different indie games doing so many interesting things, and it's almost impossible to get them in the hands of as many people. Like, it's just... I guess I am the fatalistic one. Like, how can we really show that impact? That's mm-hmm. what I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
That the desire for these things is there. I'm really hoping that this year after E3 and, like, some actual women, maybe even some women of color.
Yeah.
What a novelty that people will buy these games and everybody will be like, neat, that was a great game. Cool that it was helmed by a woman. Don't care. Cool game. Mm-hmm. That maybe studios will start to say, huh, we could possibly take some risks and maybe... we could even have a black man who's not a gangster, you know, a couple of times here and there. It's a risk, but maybe we could try it, see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think game companies are necessarily known for taking a lot of risks. And that's what we need to tell them, that it's okay. We need to vote with our dollars and say it's okay to take risks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see something different.
And that's important. And I think a lot of people are hesitant because more hesitant to vote with their dollar simply because they want to play what I don't want to say what everyone else is playing, but the latest, hottest AAA title. They want to play what other people are playing, especially if it looks like absent the racism or sexism or general misogyny might be a fairly good game, right? I don't understand that.
Yeah, but part of that is also that so many games now are a social experience that mm-hmm. they're just going to tack on a multiplayer component to everything. So you're going to buy the stuff that your friends are buying so you can play with them if you're that kind of person and you want to play multiplayer, and that in itself is limiting.
Mm-hmm.
So it keeps perpetuating the same problems because people keep buying the same shit.
Uh-huh. I'm just going to buy all the collectible games.
I'm depressed.
I mean, but you say that, but then even, you know, because I am unable to enjoy anything, right? But even if you look at characterization of animals in Animal Crossing, some of those are really stereotypical and can be super racist.
Yes.
Right? And you know, and I find myself doing stuff like that. Like, I will get a character who is super stereotypical or super racist in my, that could, in, especially in the last version of Animal Crossing, they would move into my town, and I would, like, dig holes in front of their houses so that every time they opened the door, they would either get trapped or fall into the hole, right? In an attempt to get them to move out of my town, because I was like, I just don't want you here. You're ruining my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I mean, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything is terrible.
No. We sound like horrible human beings.
No, that was super I know that that wasn't probably the most pleasant conversation ever, but, like, I enjoy it because it's very validating. You know, at the end of the day, like, it's validating to think that, like, the weirdness I'm feeling around games is not just, like, my own, not just a Sylvia problem, but, like, an actual, like, problem that other people are picking up on. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate y'all sharing your perspective. I think what's interesting is just, like, I can't get over this question of, like, games create such intricate worlds where, like, we do have such fleshed out things, but, like, why can't they do that with, like, real people and real backgrounds? Like, that's my current question I'm hung up on is, like, they make such interesting worlds. Like, Animal Crossing has such a rich world, even though it's a very simple, quote-unquote, game. Mm-hmm. So what's stopping us from doing that with, like, actual people and actual cultural identities?
Oh, I know. Pick me. I got this.
All right.
A lot of different answers. I think two major answers. One, gaming companies don't privilege writers. They don't. They feel like, you know, you can just throw a bunch of people in a room, they can have some conversations, they can create a world. And they can, but they can't always hit all of the nuance of that world and maybe make it something that looks different from the 57 other worlds that were also created in the same way last year. Yeah. That's one. Second, you got to hire people who are not white dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Or predominantly white dudes, because even when you hire women and people of color, if you hire, there's one or two in a room of 20 or 30 people, it's going to be difficult for them to speak out. And then most women, especially women, like women that we've interviewed that work in the industry, have explicitly said when they do speak out, they're silenced. Right. Mm-hmm. And Sherry Grainer Ray tells that story. I mean, she's like, you know, kind of, I don't want to say it because I'm cool. We're of the same age group. right. It's like kind of a matriarch of women designing games. But I mean, she tells stories of, you know, of being that voice in a room who's probably a lot like me going, hey, listen to this shit right here. Right. But actually having meetings moved and them not telling them where they moved or just so that they don't have to deal with her. Mm. I mean, so you have, you know, that constant pushback as well, because so diversity is not just having that person in the room, but it's also having numbers, right?
Yeah.
So that you have some kind of consensus, right, that you're not going to have with one woman or one black person or one Latina or Latina person in the room, right? You need more people. So diversity is a body of diverse folks and not just, right? Mm-hmm. Saying, we got a black guy, he's over there.
No, I mean,
it's for all of us.
It's true because you can't just make diversity happen. It's something that you have to foster and preserve. And when it is just one person, look at the Matt Damon situation, the Damonsplaining, now infamous Damonsplaining situation, right? So here's this woman saying, like, I don't know, maybe we should make more opportunities for women of color that are maybe not just prostitutes, and shout it down, even though it's not necessarily like more white people in the room, but white people also with all the power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's this constant imbalance. My fellow white people, you're just gonna have to sit down and just be silent for a while. That's what you need to do. All this. I'm gonna be quiet.
Yeah. It's amusing because I don't even get started on Matt Damon, because I said something on Facebook this week about his comment on Ellen that, you know, amounted to, you know, gay people need to stay in the closet. And then people were like, well, that's not exactly what he said. What he said was people should keep their personal lives personal. Mm. And I'm like, okay, privilege, cis male, supposedly heterosexual, right, who says this, he's not talking about straight people when he's saying you should make your personal life, you keep your personal life personal.
Look at how many of the tabloids hinge on who's fucking who. And well, tell me again that your success and money does not depend on keeping your personal life personal.
Okay. But the thing is that when it was assumed in any way, shape, or form that he might not be straight, he was very vocal. Mm-hmm. Right? Whenever it was like, oh, he and Ben Affleck are sleeping together, it was like denial city all over the fucking place. You know, and that's the thing that we have to deal with on a number of different levels, yeah, is mm-hmm. people acknowledging privilege, right? And when someone points out that, hey, this might be problematic, don't automatically jump to the defense and say, well, that's not exactly what he meant. No, look at it in a deeper way and say, how does privilege play into this?
Well, then there was that, you know, most obvious study ever. That was posted this week. You posted it, Sam. It was like, hey, guess what, guys? Somebody actually studied the fact that when you talk about privilege, white people immediately jump to the defensive and are like, oh, shit, not me, because I've suffered.
I walked 8 miles to school barefoot in the snow.
So, but it's the same thing. People are like, oh, my God, wait, you said the P word. Wait, Matt Damon didn't really mean that. Let me explain for him. Like, no, let's just take for a second a little responsibility. Okay, even if I personally did not enslave anyone and create systemic racism and take all the non-white people out of games. I didn't do that. That wasn't me. I just spent my week doing other stuff. But I can still, you know, I can still sit here and say, you know what? I do benefit in a lot of ways.
Yeah, just absolutely.
From being who I am. And maybe I should shut my fucking mouth.
You going to learn to do that sometime?
No, but I have to. I got a little fired up. I'm sorry.
See what happens when you ask us questions?
No, that was awesome. I appreciate it. Thank you. It was good to hear. I don't know. I think it's to tie it back to like why I'm on the show today. That's all of that is another reason why I like having spaces like the Hispanic Heritage Month Game Jam, because it's like we all know this is going on, and these are battles that need to be fought, and these are conversations that need to be had, and these are things that need to be pushed. But at the end of the day, you also just want a place where it's like, can I just go and like relax for a little bit? And so here's a tiny, tiny little section, however humble it is, for people who are thinking about game design to try it out. And like, who knows, maybe that's not your thing. Maybe there are other elements. But if we just get enough of these tiny little like life rafts stitched together, like we can build from there. And then I don't think that these conversations will go away anytime soon, and these like tough feelings will go away anytime soon. But like how you have your website, this podcast, like here's a place where we can at least stitch, and I'll stitch it together with my little game jam, and we'll stitch it together to that next Twitter account, and somewhere there'll be a safe spot for somebody to come listen and think about games without it being like a huge freaking negative deal in their lives.
Right. Yeah, and somewhere after we get all these things stitched together, all these like little life rafts, eventually we'll have a safe space big enough that we won't fucking drown.
Yeah, exactly. That's the hope. We don't want to drown.
Well, that was pretty awesome. Do you have any other questions for us? I don't want to cut you off and say, all right, we're done answering your questions, because, you know.
I think I'll just say that I hope this is a nice beginning for me talking to y'all, lots of people talking about not just Latino representation in games, but, again, this whole idea of intersectionality in games, like even if people just think about when their understanding of American history started, like
yes,
we could have a whole other podcast just talking about that whole mess. So I'll just say that I hope this isn't the end of our conversation, even if it's the end of this episode.
Wow. Can you come and end all of our episodes? Because that was really good.
Just take that audio clip. Play us out, Sylvia.
Anytime, Sylvia. I mean, because this has been a blast for us as well. You are welcome back anytime you want to come. We will welcome you with open arms.
Thank you. I feel like I should probably play something with Legos before the next time we record this. So
Charlotte is usually the Lego buff. It's just this game. I get caught in these damn collectible games, and then I blame it on my kid.
Yeah. No, but Charlotte does have that effect on people, because like today my son asked me why certain people were born different ways. I think the example he used was like somebody missing a finger or something. And I explained DNA to him using Legos as an example, Charlotte.
That's awesome.
So that's your
fault. I just really like Legos. I don't know why.
It's infectious when you talk about it. It makes me want to go build something. I don't know.
I mean, I really love Legos. Like, I spend like way too much time like reading about them on Reddit and stuff.
Legos are pretty awesome.
See, Reddit can be used for good.
It can. My little Lego Reddit community is not little and not mean.
So. Yay! All right, two quick news items, if I may.
Yes, ma'am.
Little things related to us. One, Sam and I are going to Detroit this month to speak at AlterConf. On you know, activism and intersectionality and crowdfunding and all the things. And second, we are fielding Not Your Mama's Gamer Extra Life team. We'll probably post about it again, because we posted once on the site already, right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, we'll post about it again this month. Sorry to spam you, except not, because we want your monies, all the monies. For hospitals, for children, for charity. Many of us are too old to be staying up all night gaming, and yet we're going to do it anyway because we are willing to suffer for charity. So,
and this is my sixth year in a row doing it. So, you know what? And I'm old. So to make me stay up 24 hours straight.
You ain't going to stay up 24 hours. You go fall asleep. Which I'll make most of it. It'll be great.
And my mother actually comes to town just to watch my daughter so that I can do this every year.
Oh, that's right. That's cute.
Yeah.
So watch out for that, and that's it. Thanks, Sylvia, for coming. That was great.
Thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
It was fun. So let me just give us out really quickly. So for those of you out there listening to the podcast, if you enjoy what we do, please take a moment to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher or any of the other places we are currently hosting the podcast, because every little bit helps, simply, you know, kind of boosting us so that other people can find us in all our awesome. Don't keep it to yourself. And you can always find us on Facebook. Just look for Not Your Mama's Gamer. And, of course, there is the blog where you can find daily daily kind of really thoughtful posts on games in the games industry at nymgamer.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at nymgamer, where just about anything might happen. You may happen in on Alicia or I or both of us fighting with various and sundry gamer gators at any given moment. It's been pretty quiet lately. If those things are not your thing, you can follow the Not Your Mama's Gamer Tumblr account, which is nymgamer.tumblr.com. Does that cover everything? I think so. Well, if all those things, you can feel free to send us emails or voicemails, video mails, whatever you want to send us, and we will reply in kind in one form or fashion or another. And that's at nymgamer@gmail.com. I think that covers everything. So, until next time, that brings us to the end of episode 112, where we were privileged and honored to have with us Sylvia Monreal from Como Se Dice Nerd.
You did it twice. I did it twice.
Talking to us about her site, her work, and the Hispanic Heritage Month Game Jam, which you really need to find out. We will put links to all of these things in the show notes so that you can check them out and consider doing your own submission. And, of course, follow her in all of the possible ways on Tumblr and Twitter and the like, so that you can keep up with all the cool things that she's doing on a regular basis. So until next time, when we have episode 113, where we're going to talk about all various kinds of things with all various kinds of fun folks. Stay warm, stay dry, and as always, my friends, game on.
Game on.
Game on. Ooh. We'll be right back.